心。
Bonjour, and desnakas, sky howl, badwataman, and dao. Good morning. My name is Sky Howl of the Potawatomi Tribal Nation. On this Earth Day, we invite you all to remember and to acknowledge the original stewards of this land that we are on, the Comanche, the Midday, the Tawakani, the Kitsal, the Coatica, the Carasillo, the Apache, the Jumano in El Pueblo, the Wichita, the Tonkawa, the Kiowa. May we close our eyes in silence as we remember the ancestors that came before us, the original stewards of this land.
Now please rise and embody your spirit for our opening hymn. It's in your teal hymnal, number 1001, Breaths. The teal hymnal, number 1001, Breaths. And Mark Briety will lead us in the song.
Mic check. No, hang on. Mic check. Okay, I wanted to give you a refresher in musical sign language. The double bar with the two dots is the repeat sign. So in the middle of the first page, the repeat goes to the middle of the last page. And then the last time, on the second page, it says two coda. It's got a circle with a cross, and that's jumped to the very last line.
You can read with me from the screen. We light this flame to honor the spirit of love and the flame of life that is fanned by each breath we take. And we light this flame in gratitude for the life passed down in ages to us by our ancestors. And we light this flame to honor the covenant of love for each other, for our children, and for all the exuberant and abundant life on earth today. And we light this flame in commitment to all the generations of life in all its forms that are yet to come.
Good morning. We're this morning's lay worship leaders. My name is Amelia Coford.
And my name is Susan Littman. We welcome you to Wildflower Church.
As Unitarian Universalists, we are committed to principles of inclusion, acceptance, and respect, rather than to any creed or dogma. We gather in joy and kindness to support one another's unique journeys toward wholeness and fulfillment, so that we may open our hearts to each other and to the world. I want to give a special welcome to our first-time and returning visitors. After the service, please be sure to join us for refreshments and conversation in the community room in the building to your left as you exit the sanctuary. We want to get you to know you and to answer any questions you may have. Members, we encourage you to wear your name tags and leave them in the basket in the community room.
This Sunday is a bit different than some others. In honor of Earth Day, excuse me, let me find my page. Shuffle. Our service is being led by the Wild Earth Climate Action Team and also some of the youth and young adults of Wildflower. We are also delighted to have Patrice King as our pianist this morning. The theme of the service is Justice for Each Generation, and this is one of hundreds of services with the same theme in different faith communities that will be happening today and over the next few months. We usually have a printed order of service, but we do not have one this morning in the spirit of conserving resources. So the leaders will guide you from the pulpit so you know what's coming next. This is an intergenerational service. Children are welcome to remain here with their families, and later on we will have some opportunities for them to come up to the front. As you exit the sanctuary to go to the community room, there will be a donation box for carbon offsets. By donating a dollar, which will go to an organization that reduces greenhouse gases, you can offset the carbon generated by driving here and using the electricity today at church. Now, let's take a moment to welcome the people sitting near you, especially those you don't know well.
Morning. My name is Dee Adams, and I'm a member of the Board of Trustees here at WAFAR. We think community matters here, and it's what supports us in living our mission, which is growing spiritually together, spreading love, justice, and joy. Because we love our community, we want feedback to keep it healthy. The Ministerial Evaluation Task Force will hold focus groups today at 1 p.m. here in the sanctuary. Some of you have already said that you're coming, and we invite anybody to join us. You don't have to have filled out our ministerial survey, but we really would like to have your feedback. This is a survey and a follow-up conversation around our ministry at Wildflower. A couple of opportunities for justice are available today and on Thursday evening. Today, after the service, the Wild Earth Climate Action Team will be hosting a letter writing activity in the community room to advocate for the Reclaim Act, which would provide federal funding for environmental cleanup and just economic transition away from coal in Appalachia. They will also be passing around a card to Michael Foster, a UU activist. I believe he was here, wasn't he, earlier? Yes. And he's serving a one-year prison sentence in North Dakota for closing the shutoff valve on the Keystone Tar Sands pipeline. And the second opportunity is this Thursday, April 26, 6 to 8 p.m., here in the sanctuary. The Reentry Advocacy Project, more fondly known as RAP, will host a panel discussion on the difficulties people experience in reentering society on leaving prison. The Travis County District Attorney, Margaret Moore, will give the keynote address, and the panel will discuss personal stories showing the issues and barriers people face regarding reentry from prison. The RAP program is run by the Austin-Travis County Reentry Roundtable, which is a coalition of public sector leaders, community members, individuals with criminal histories, and people who care about successful reentry from prison. Our minister, Reverend Ferguson, connected us to this opportunity to increase our awareness, and I hope lots of you will be present. I'm going to encourage you, if you come on Thursday night, to park across the street so the guests and people from the community can have the parking spaces here. And so when we get to joy, I really want to welcome all of you who bring us joy, this community, those of you who are visitors for the first time or returning visitors. So much joy is felt by having you here today.
I thought I was about to be pushed off. I thought I had been invited by the Climate Action Team to give a meditation in generations. My name is Reverend Brian Ferguson. I have the honor of serving Wildflower Church. And I think it's so easy for us human beings with our egos to think that we are the destination of evolution. We are the destination of history. And we have reached the culmination of culture in ourselves. And I think that's wrong. I always loved what Dorothy Day, the Catholic community activist, said, that our role in life was to be a link in the chain of being to connect our ancestors to our future generations. And Elise Boulding, who is a Quaker sociologist, has this wonderful idea, and I think I've mentioned it to you before, about the 200-year now and the long present. And it's a fascinating idea. She says, think of the hand of the oldest person who's touched and influenced you. And think of the youngest hand or person who you'll touch and influence. And she reckons that's a 200-year plan. And that's how we should think of our lives, connecting the ancestors to the future generations. And I worked that out for myself. And it's quite a fascinating thing. And I have this picture that I would like to convey to you. I think of my maternal grandmother. She was born on the 1st of January, 1900, which I thought was the coolest birthday. I was hoping she'd make it to the year 2000. It was a New Year's Eve in 2000, she'd have been 100. She got to 93, which is pretty good going. But I think of her, and then I think of my mother, who was born in 1931. And I was born in 1962, so that gives you a clue to how old I am. 55. I know I don't look a day over 54. And then my daughter was born in 2003. Now imagine if she has a child, say a daughter, good chance she'd be born in 2030, 2040. So very good chance she would make it to the year 2100. So I think of that connection from my grand to my mother, through myself to my daughter, to her potential child. That would take us from 1900 to 2100. That is the 200-year now that I think Elise Boulding is talking about. I think if we start thinking in those terms, it's really quite a powerful idea that we are not the destination of anything. What we are is a link in that chain of generations where we want to take the best that we learn from our families, our ancestors, and pass it on to those future generations, trying to leave both them and a world in a better place than we found it. And I think when we look at my generation and the generations in here, maybe we haven't done that. Maybe we're not leaving the planet in a better condition than we found it. We have improved elements of culture, but there's elements about our environmental footprint that I think each generation in the 20th century has got worse. And I think it's also important not to romanticize the ancestors as well, because I know there's a lot of wisdom with ancestors, but I know my maternal grandmother was a racist. She was a religious bigot. And I would even say in many ways she was sexist. And she also taught me how you can still find love in incredibly difficult circumstances. So I think one of our roles in that chain of being is to find what is good, what is loving, what is life-affirming, what is life-enhancing from the past, and pass it on. And what thwarts life? What curtails beauty? What causes injustice and oppression is to try and stop it at our generation. And that's what I think Dorothy Day was talking about in being that link in the chain of being, passing on what is best and blocking what does not enhance life. So I invite you to rise in body or spirit to sing our next hymn, hymn 396, I Know This Rose Will Open.
Good morning, I'm Jeanette, and we have a responsive reading, 512, in your green book, 512. We give thanks this day for the expanding grandeur of creation, worlds known and unknown. Galaxies beyond galaxies, filling us with awe and challenging our imaginations.
We give thanks this day.
For this fragile planet Earth, its times and tides, its sunsets and seasons.
We give thanks this day.
For the joy of human life, its wonders and surprises, its hopes and achievements.
We give thanks this day.
For our human community, our common past and future hopes, our oneness transcending all separation, our capacity to work for peace and justice in the midst of hostility and oppression.
We give thanks this day.
For high hopes and noble causes, for faith without fanaticism, for understanding of views not shared,
we give thanks this day.
For all who have labored and suffered for a fairer world, who have lived so that others might live in dignity and freedom,
we give thanks this day.
For human liberty and sacred rights, for opportunities to change and grow, to affirm and choose, we give thanks this day. We pray that we may live not by our fears, but by our hopes, not by our words, but by our deeds. Amelia?
My son Miles is 1 year old. If he's lucky enough to live to be 83, he will see the end of this century, the year 2100. So like Reverend Ferguson talked about, he's part of this long present that I can see now. What will the world look like in 2100? It's heartbreaking to think that he might face a world very different than mine, one where there's been an energy crisis, economic collapse, heat waves, and floods. When he was 4 months old, the New York Magazine arrived in my mailbox with their cover story, The Doomed Earth Catalog, telling stories of massive droughts affecting food supply by the year 2080. It's so easy to respond to climate change predictions by ignoring them or feeling paralyzed with fear. It's a difficult thing to look at head on because there's no clear path to a solution. This is a time when being in religious community with others is so important. Community provides us with the strength and the resolve to take action and find hope, even when things are uncertain. So, in addition to fears about the world Miles might grow up in, I have hopes. I dream that as he's sitting on his porch at the age of 83, he will see flowers, birds, squirrels, and a clear sky. People have stopped extracting fossil fuels because there was more and more political pressure to do so, prices rose too high, and renewable energies took over. People look back at the industrial consumption era and shake their heads, wondering why Western culture was so fanatical about acquiring objects. These days, the fashion is to live simply in a small house with a big garden, to get around on public transportation, and to eat mostly vegetarian.
The culture's biggest heroes are the scientists and authors and faith leaders who pointed the way to a sustainable possibility. I'd be naive if I thought this exact scenario was the most likely outcome, but as a parent, a UU, and an educator, I will do what I can to work with others to bring it about. When you think about these prophetic voices that help us see a different future, they often come from teenagers and youth. We want to say that we're proud of the youth who participated in the school walkout this past Friday, calling for an end to gun violence, and that includes lots of families from this church. The next part of the service today is a mini play about another group of youth making their voices heard. The play is called Youth v. Gov. It's being used in congregations across the country, and it was written by our own Allie Tharp, who will play the narrator.
Yeah!
And she wrote it along with fourth through sixth graders from the UU Fellowship of Central Oregon and Ayla Halberstadt.
Testing, testing, good. Okay, good morning, everyone. This is an interactive play in a number of ways. Firstly, if any youth would like to join the youth over here, you're welcome to come up and stand with them or sit on the floor. This is kind of the youth versus the government. At times during the service, the youth will win, and they'll say, woohoo, and then we all say, justice for each generation. So I'll kind of hold this up to cue that we're all going to say these words together. And I have a wonderful cast of people, if y'all would give them a round of applause, just knowing. And Sheila, if you want to be at the podium. Okay. Children, if you'd like to come up, anyone, or people of all ages, if you'd like to come up, you're more than welcome to do so now. Okay. In the year 2015, 21 children and youth filed a constitutional climate lawsuit against the United States President and federal government in the U.S. District Court of Oregon, arguing that the government's actions that cause climate change and fail to address climate change fail to protect the public trust, resources, and they violate the younger generation's constitutional rights to life, liberty, and property.
More frequent, causing devastation to our earth and home.
I live in the South, and because of climate change, my family's land that I would inherit is being lost to rising sea levels.
I live in the North, and because of climate change, the permafrost is melting. This is causing serious erosion problems in our community and releasing methane into the atmosphere, which makes climate change even worse for future generations.
The youth want the courts to order the federal government to adopt a climate action plan based upon the best available climate science and the values of social justice.
We want a good life, so we need climate action.
Now the government, they were not very excited about this lawsuit. The fossil fuel industry also is not very excited about this lawsuit, because it's going to seriously affect their business plans and cost them a lot of money if the government does enact a climate action plan based on the best available climate science. So pretty soon, the industry decides it didn't want the government to handle this lawsuit alone. The government and the fossil fuel industry file a motion to dismiss the case.
Absurd.
This trial cannot possibly happen. It's demanding too much. Please dismiss this case at once.
Exercising my reasonable judgment, I have no doubt that the right to a climate system capable of sustaining human life is fundamental to a free and ordered society. Motion to dismiss, denied.
We will appeal this decision to a higher court.
And so they tried to have the trial thrown out again. But in the meantime, the government and the fossil fuel industry had to answer the questions from the youth's lawyers. The fossil fuel industry consistently gave the same answer to every single question.
We lack sufficient information regarding the youth's allegations. And on that basis, we deny them.
However, the government did not get the memo to deny, deny, deny. Mind you, President Obama was still in office at this time. And the government actually admitted to a lot of the youth's allegations during the questioning.
Has the government known about the science of human-caused climate change for over 50 years?
Yes.
Is it true that the United States produced over 25% of the whole world's carbon dioxide emissions between 1850 and 2012?
Yes.
And is it true that human-caused climate change threatens the public health and welfare of current and future generations and may lead to the extinction of many species?
Okay, yes. Yes, you're correct. Yes, climate change is happening at a very fast rate because of human activities. Yes, the government knows about the risks and is still giving subsidies and drilling rights to fossil fuel companies. Yes. The climate change threatens public health and welfare for current and future generations and other species.
The motion to take the case to appeals court before it even happens is denied. This case should go to trial.
Judge, we motion to withdraw from this lawsuit.
Motion for the fossil fools to withdraw from the lawsuit granted. The trial will begin on February 5th, 2018.
Woohoo! With a trial date set, the youth were feeling more confident than ever. However, the federal government, now representing the Trump administration, still attempted to postpone or prevent the trial from happening. They petitioned the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals for what is called a writ of mandamus, basically arguing that the district court judge had overreached their authority by allowing this historic trial to move forward. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals held a hearing in front of a three-judge panel in San Francisco on December 11, 2017, to determine whether the case can go to trial. The February 5th trial date came and went. However, on March 7th, the three judges finally announced their decision. All three judges agreed that the youth should have their day in court, calling the government's petition drastic and extraordinary.
We are making progress. This is our home, and we want to protect it.
We have raised awareness and inspired people of all ages to speak up for climate justice.
We will continue to fight for justice for each generation. This is only the beginning.
We are hopeful that the new trial date will come soon, and we want to remind everyone that all people deserve a voice, and we cannot survive without respecting our beautiful world.
This is the story of 21 real children and youth from around the United States. They are pictured over here. This story affects all of us. These 21 voices represent our descendants on this earth, and we have an obligation to care for their future. The new trial has been set for October 29th, 2018. We don't know exactly how it will go, but we do know that standing up to injustice is something that anyone of any age can do. We all share this earth, and we are all connected across generations through the bonds of love, life, and responsibility to one another.
Justice for each generation.
We are grateful that Wildflower is a place we can join together with all of our wonderful generations to care for each other and the earth. Each week, we lift up the spiritual value of generosity by taking an offering for the work of the church. If you are visiting with us today for the first time, please let the plate pass, as your presence here is gift enough. Please give as generously as you are able. The offering will now be given, and thank you for your generosity.
And with the markers, let's please make sure that the parents hold markers until we're ready to use them, just to be safe.
Thank you for your gifts and blessings on both the gifts and the givers. I invite you now to join me now in the spirit of prayer, meditation, and reflection. Spirit of life and abundant love, Spirit of this community of many generations gathered together in this sacred time and in this sacred space, let us take the time so that we may become in touch with the deepest desires of our hearts and the memories of our minds. We are creatures with knowledge of the past and hopes for the future. And in recalling our past, may we find the humility to learn both from our failures and our successes. In anticipating our future, may we find the strength and courage to challenge ourselves to become more of what we desire to be. And as the adversities of life remind us of our illusions of control and delusions of independence, may they also remind us of those who can help us and our interdependence on one another. In times of our greatest vulnerability and uncertainty, may we remember those moments of our highest resolves and those sources of courage and strength. And in doing so, may we be the embodiment of our highest ideals and an inspiration to those around us and to future generations. May we recognize the wisdom and insights of all, young and old, novice and experienced, fresh to the cause, and those exhausted by the struggle. Let those of us who are older recognize that those younger may not need our advice and guidance as much as our recognition of their power and ideals. History has been littered with those older and with more power thwarting the younger generations and the less powerful. May all of us find a way to support those new leaders with their new ideas, their new approaches, and their new energy. May we listen to all who are most impacted by injustice and discrimination and amplify their voice and create power together in partnership. And on this Earth Day, let us honor our love for this planet by doing more than passive respect for the interdependent web of all existence and covenant to become engaged advocates for this planet and the future generations whose lives will depend on it. May we honor this exuberant abundance of life on this Earth, and may we be part in creating justice for each generation. I invite you to join me in silence. Blessed be and amen.
Please turn to page 465 for the responsive reading. It's at the back of the gray hymnals. If we had the wisdom to survive, to stand like slow-growing trees on a ruined place, asking not too much of earth or heaven, their houses strongly placed upon the valley sides, and over it, birdsong like a canopy. On the steeps where greed and ignorance cut down the old forest. The veins of forgotten springs will have opened. Families will be singing in the fields. They will take nothing from the ground that they will not return, whatever their grief at parting. The abundance of this place, the songs of the people and its birds, will be health and wisdom and indwelling light.
My name is Allie Tharp, and I am the program director for an organization, Unitarian Universalist Ministry for Earth. And so my job is to support Unitarian Universalist congregations in their earth justice ministries, primarily across the United States and Canada. So it's a huge, huge blessing to me and a huge task. And I couldn't be more grateful to be part of this community where there is such a thriving climate action team that does regular education opportunities and organizes solidarity drives with Standing Rock and all of these things. So I came here from North Texas and just felt immediately so grateful to be at a church that has such a strong climate action team. So thank you all for the good work that you do. I wanted to just tell you that all over the United States, all over Canada, all over the world, Unitarian Universalists are taking action on climate change and on issues of environmental justice, where we see that we have disproportionate burdens of pollution, of toxins in neighborhoods, of the places where extraction happens are primarily not in wealthy neighborhoods. They're not in middle-class white neighborhoods. They are in poor neighborhoods and developing countries where there's a history of this injustice along racial and class lines. So we see that in order, as Brian was talking about, these are things with really long histories that each of us in the moment has an opportunity to do something about. And we all live these precious lives along this path as caretakers of this earth with this responsibility to one another. So the Unitarian Universalist faith sees the respect for the inherent worth and dignity of every person. It sees building justice and equity in human relations, and also this idea that we have respect for the interdependent web of life. And these things are connected. When we see that our disrespect for the web of life is also disproportionately affecting certain people, That's where environmental justice connects. It's looking at our human injustice with our injustice of extracting the earth and over-extracting the earth. So we do something about it collectively. We have been for many years. We have general assemblies of Unitarians every summer, and numerous times the bodies of the General Assembly in the United States have called for more action on climate change, called for support of the Paris Climate Pledge in 2015. So this is something that, as a faith, we care about, and as a faith, we're doing something about together. So we carry this into our deeds, into our daily lives, and each of us as individuals creates a common momentum towards change, towards positive change for climate justice, for environmental justice, and equity in our human relations. So I wanted to tell you, particularly since we're talking about intergenerational justice as part of our second principle and part of our principles in general, that the youngest plaintiff in this lawsuit that we did the play about, his name is Levi Draheim, and he is a Unitarian Universalist living in Satellite Beach, Florida. So Levi is 10 years old, and he's suing the United States government. And last week, he also entered into a lawsuit against the state of Florida about climate change. So this amazing 10-year-old in one of our churches is holding this tremendous burden to challenge our government to do something that they should be doing anyway. And I just am so inspired by, you know, I think a lot of you probably see me as a young person, but I look at Levi and I think, oh my goodness, like this young boy is doing so much. And so I wanted to celebrate him and celebrate everyone who takes action, because all of us together have the power to make change. So what we're going to do now is very different. This is a ritual that we'll do together. There, in 2014, a lot of art activists created something called the Climate Ribbon, which was each individual person will write on their ribbon, what do you love? The answer to this question: what do you love and hope to never lose to climate chaos? And don't do it yet. We'll take some reflection. But I just want to tell you the story of how this emerged so that you don't give me all the credit. This was a collective art piece that was established by, I want to say, over a dozen different artists and activists. So the climate ribbon is something that's been done all over the world. And each individual ribbon together represents our common care and concern and commitment to do something about climate change and to address it in a way that builds justice in the world. So what we will do is, I think if my movers can help us move some things now, this behind me, I'll put this on. So this behind me is a chalice, which is the symbol of Unitarian Universalism. So, the symbol of the chalice represents our common faith as Unitarian Universalists. And what we're going to do here is each person will write the answer to the question, what do you love and hope to never lose to climate chaos, on your ribbon? And you can also put your name and your age and Austin or whatever place you call home on the ribbon if you have room. And then I'll call folks up by section, and we'll form a procession down the middle aisle right here, and you'll weave the ribbon through the chalice like this, okay? So all of our ribbons will go here together and create the climate ribbon chalice. Okay? So we'll just have a moment of silence and reflection and writing. And then we'll start with this section over here. So again, you'll write the answer to the question, what do you love and hope to never lose to climate chaos? And we'll start with this section right here. So if anyone is ready in this section, we'll begin our procession, and then I'll call different groups up. Thank you. Okay. Thank you all so much. Together, we form this commitment and this beautiful chalice, and it represents all of our love and our care that we'll carry into the world. And if you would please join me in our final hymn, number 380. It's on page 383. It's very small, and we will sing it together three times through.